drawing room over here.
Oh, hey, come on in. When it comes to the arts, which discipline requires more dedication, immersion, and endurance than documentary filmmaking? Yeah, I don't know either. And right now, I'm lucky enough to be joined by two such practitioners. Herbert Golder is the director and professor of classical studies at Boston University. He directed the film Ballad of a Righteous Merchant. And Alex Siddons directed The Art of Incarceration, a documentary that follows an arts and vocational program for Indigenous offenders and ex-offenders in Australia. They both have film screening in this year's Melbourne Documentary Film Festival. And they're both my guests in the drawing room. Herbert and Alex, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's start with hearing a little bit about your films, kind of the elevator pitch, if you like, for those who haven't seen them. I'll start with you, Alex. What's your film essentially trying to deal with?
So my film explores the issue of Indigenous incarceration. It's based inside Fulham Correctional, which is a prison in Gippsland, in the Yirrung unit, which is the Indigenous unit there. And it explores the torture on Indigenous arts programs throughout the Victorian jail system on both sides of the system, so upon release as well. And the film explores the artist's preparation to an exhibition called Confined, which takes place every year in St Kilda Town Hall. However, we've expanded on the traditional sort of prison documentary formula, and it's half inside, and then we follow the artist's journey back upon release.
Okay. Was it hard to get access? I mean, documentary making, the best documentary making is about access that people usually don't get.
Absolutely. And yeah, very difficult. My previous films and sort of just my intentions behind it was probably what got me through. But yeah, very hard, much dedication.
Herbert, your film... Let's start firstly about what you were trying to do here.
Okay. The question of access is very relevant, so but I won't start there. So my film is, in essence, an intimate portrait of the filmmaker Werner Herzog, with whom I have been friends and with whom I have worked over the years on a number of pictures and a number of different capacities. And it's a film that I made while we were making a feature film called My Son, What Have You Done?, which we had written together. So it wasn't a film that I was on set to make because I was busy making a feature film. It's a film that somehow just happened because I was in the right place at the right time, and I sensed that this was an opportunity that I shouldn't let go.
And you said you want to come to access. Tell me what the access point was here.
Well, the access part here is really the motivation for me to make this film. Werner Herzog is a legendary figure in the history of cinema. People have seen these films that feature him and know his epic larger-than-life persona, where he stares down the camera and talks about the meaning of life or the meaningless of life, the abysses into which we all fall, and the absence of harmony in the universe and so forth. This, what you see in my film, is a side of him that's known only to his friends and close collaborators. And when I say access, I made the film because I realized while we were making My Son, What Have You Done? That there's probably nobody who has the kind of relationship that I have with him, who's been friends with him for so many years, who has worked closely with him for so many years, and who has his trust. And I felt it almost a duty to make this film, that this should somehow also be part of the Herzog legacy. I thought initially that Werner would tell me to turn the camera off because he doesn't like to be watched or documented when he works.
Yeah, he likes to watch.
Yeah, exactly. He's a private man, but he didn't tell me to turn the camera off. And so when he didn't tell me to turn the camera off, I knew he was complicitous in this and that he, on some level, accepted and even approved of what I was about to do and let me make my film rather than his making a film about him.
It's not the first time he's been filmed making a film, right?
That's correct. There's a wonderful film, one of my favorites, Les Blank's Burden of Dreams, for instance. But there you see the epic Werner Herzog dragging a 210-ton ship over a mountain in the Peruvian Amazon and having to face down the tantrums of a borderline insane Klaus Kinski. And this is another side. This is a film where you see him fix Michael Shannon's hair before a shot because he wants to be the last person between the camera and the actor. And you see a kind of intimacy with the actors. You see an intimate exchanges with me. You see him laugh. You see him smile. You see him hug his wife. You see sides of him at work, the master at work, that are really not available in the other films, where even though they're made by other filmmakers, and in some cases very, very excellent, I mean, Les Blank won a British Academy Award for that movie. He's a was a great filmmaker. Werner directs it, even if somebody else is shooting it. Werner's such a strong character and
personality. So did he direct your film?
No. He let me make my film as I wished. Didn't interfere, didn't say anything.
And you think that was because of the relationship and trust?
Sure, the relationship and the trust. If anybody was going to have access to him at such close quarters and make a film of him at work, it would have to be me.
Well, Alex, let's talk about your access to incarcerated men. How did you establish those relationships to tell those stories?
I met Robbie Romanda, one of the lead characters, months after his release from prison, and I was certainly intrigued by him. Interesting character, to say the least, and I connected with his threes.
Well, tell me why he's such an interesting character.
Well, he weighs 160 kilos. He's a former super heavyweight jiu-jitsu champion, and when he'd just gotten out, he's a fairly hard character. So to hear that he was reconnecting with his very sincere passion for art was very intriguing, because he's not someone you would look at and straight away think art. No offense, Big Robbie, but that's very much true. Quite an intimidating figure. So I was certainly intrigued by him, and I connected with his three sons very much, who have been a part of the journey. So I was aware that there was some incredible art happening within the Victorian jail system. I was also gifted a painting that was painted inside Fulham. So I went on to contact the jail, and I was given a sort of primary visit where I went and spoke to the art group and discussed the prospect of a film exploring their artistic progress with the hope of documenting their journey upon release. But Robbie had informed me about how difficult that would be given to the array of challenges one faces when leaving the jail system and the inherent issues of drugs and poverty and alcoholism that many, you know, are caught up in. So I met Chris Austin, one of the lead characters, and he was very receptive towards my idea, and I showed them some of my early works and they were very much behind me, and what I saw was a great yearning for their story to be told. So I started off really focusing on the art and their artistic development as we built towards the exhibition, but then the further we went into the art, the further we went into the character. So the level of honesty that was displayed was quite amazing for, you know, very hard, violent men. It was quite astonishing what we accomplished in that space.
On RN, I'm Patricia Carvelis. My guests in the drawing room are directors Alex Siddons and Herbert Golder. We're talking about art, incarceration, documentary filmmaking. One of you, it's a very high-profile person, and you had this access. You were developing the relationships, really, as you were filming. What are the different challenges with those sorts of scenarios as a documentary filmmaker?
The challenges of working, say, in a jail environment is obviously trust. It's really about the energy you carry. There's so much nonverbal communication within the jail space, so it's really about how you conduct yourself and the energy you bring. So I was sort of sussed out, and, you know, the fellas worked me out and I earned their respect, and they were surprised that we kept coming back in to keep shooting, because as Christopher would state, a lot of people come into that jail space and say, we're going to do this and that. Then they get the funding and they're never seen again. We never got the funding, but we kept coming back. And every time we came back, we went deeper into the story, and the level of intimacy just kept, you know, the barriers kept getting pushed. So it was really quite, yeah, incredible. And the level of access we're given by the prison staff as well, there's a great sense of trust with us and the artists. So we filmed inside cells around the unit, you know, a lot of freedom. And as Chris will state, in his 40 years of prison, he's never seen anything quite like it. So nothing like this has ever been done in the Australian jail system before. So it's all about respect and trust. That's the fundamental commodity of documentary filmmaking. And without that, you've got nothing and you'll go nowhere.
Do you agree with that, Herbert?
I do. And I started out with the trust and the intimacy, and the challenge that I faced was how to make a film out of what I was privileged to be able to capture with the camera, because bits and pieces and, you know, wonderful, delicious moments don't necessarily a movie make. And so my challenge as a filmmaker was to find a way to tell a story. And I couldn't assume that the viewer necessarily knew much about Werner Herzog. I couldn't assume that the viewer had ever seen the feature film, My Son, What Have You Done? So I had to make a film that would had legs, that would stand on its own, that would be available and accessible to anybody that went into the theater, and they would walk out thinking they had been entertained and they had heard a really riveting and fascinating tale. So that really, for me, was the challenge, was to how to turn, as I say, wonderful moments and small epiphanies into a story that would be compelling for an audience that maybe didn't know what they were walking into.
Your film is really very much about filmmaking itself in some ways, and about the art-making process. What did it teach you about filmmaking?
You mean metaphysically or technically or
you can,
all?
You can take it however you like. This is an open conversation.
Okay. Well, a word of advice to other documentary filmmakers. I mean, obviously experienced filmmakers understand this very well. Audio. One of the biggest problems I had with my film were technical audio issues, because I was shooting from the hip. I wasn't on set to shoot this documentary, but to make a feature film. And what that means is that when I work with Werner on a feature film, we're often rewriting scenes. We'll suddenly come on a location and an idea for a new scene will suggest itself and we'll write something. He's very comfortable in having me work with the actors. So I would just take out the camera when I thought I saw something developing that might be interesting. Because of that, I didn't necessarily have the mic situated properly. I would be recording with in-camera mic. And when I went and looked at the raw footage, instead of hearing what I want you to hear, you're hearing blah, 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 blah. So audio. On another level, it just reinforced my understanding of film as storytelling. That really, at the end of the day, if it wasn't compelling as a story, it didn't for me work as a film. And in fact, the first iteration of the film, I wanted to keep myself out of it, just be a fly on the wall. A film about Werner Herzog at work. It didn't work at all. It was utterly opaque. It was hermetic. I showed it to Werner and he said, "Herb, I was there and even I don't know what's going on." So I put it aside for a few years and I came back to it and I looked at it and I realized you have to tell a story. You have to know who the storyteller is. You have to make the lines of narration very, very clear, because I have to tell several stories. I, first of all, can't assume that the viewer necessarily knows the myth of Orestes, which is very important to the feature film. So I have to make that clear. I have to make the backstory clear, because that's relevant to the story I'm telling. I have to make the fictionalized version of that clear, which is the film that we're making. And I have a running commentary on Werner at work, where I explore some of the deeper, more abiding themes of his films as they are manifest in what we're doing here. And so the important thing is to have all four strands of narration running parallel, but never crisscrossing and getting confused with one another. And to be absolutely so, ambiguity is wonderful, but confusion is terrible.
Alex, how did you handle the kind of off-the-cuff audio elements?
Sometimes you have to go with the camera audio, unfortunately. And we had the issue as well with a lot of the men in the film are quite drug affected, so their dialogue is not as clear as what it may have been. So we also had that issue as well. So sometimes we had to use subtitles, but the vernacular wasn't as clear as it might have been from an academic or someone speaking on ABC radio. So that was its own challenge. We had to really get as close as we could whilst keeping that respectful space, because in jail, everyone's very close together and they don't have much space or much freedom, obviously. So you really got to keep that distance and not be too intrusive and just abide by those unwritten rules which ensure your safety and respect within that environment, because things can turn very quickly and you don't want that to happen. So yeah, we had to just play it play by play. But yeah, we came out with the audio just all right, so it's all good.
Let's talk about the narration in your films. Herbert, you use a voice of God narration in your documentary, and Alex, I know you don't use any.
No.
Tell me about those alternative choices.
So I had to turn to God out of necessity in my film, because it didn't work without narration at all. It was, I say, incoherent and it was opaque. And that it really had to have a storyteller, in some sense, leading the viewer through the narrative, because there are a lot of ideas in the film. There are a lot of moments that could be cryptic and elliptical. And so it was very important for me as the narrator, as the voiceover narrator, to draw the audience's attention where I thought it needed to be at that moment. And yet it's not didactic. It's not a didactic narration. I'm not telling anybody what anything means. I'm just pointing the viewer And I'm making an observation. For instance, we see at one point a herd of ostriches run across the field. And I make the comment that there are many birds in Werner's films, some of his most important characters. And leave it at that and let the viewer let that sink in. Think, oh, yeah, I remember the end of Stroszek, that dancing chicken, you know. So it's never, I don't push too far, but it's just constantly kind of leading you as to where you might reflect upon what you see.
How about you, Alex? No narration.
Yeah, no narration. So we do give a lot of statistical context throughout the film on the issue of Indigenous incarceration, which is crucially important for
so
the audience.
So that's weaved through.
That's weaved throughout, yeah. So the story is purely told from the perspective of the inmates, and then the titles on screen state factual statistical evidence on the issue, or they sort of state an update on the character. For example, you know, they've been released this many months ago. So we made that as objective as possible, and we just really stuck to the facts when it came to the text. And then we allowed the characters to offer a fully immersive experience, so that it's like the audience was looking through their eyes and seeing through the eyes of someone who they'd never looked through. That was our decision, and we really placed the audience in some difficult positions because of this. They have to really make up their own mind about how they feel and what's happening, and I think for that it's quite a unique work.
Both of your films examine the value of art and making art. What is it about art and making art that your films want audiences to notice or to value, perhaps?
Well, in my film, it's summed up by the quote at the end of the film from Werner Herzog himself, where he says, "Film is not analysis, it is the agitation of the mind." So I suppose that's what I also hope to have achieved with my film, is agitation of the mind.
Alex?
In many ways, it's a tribute to the power of creativity and how that can induce self-esteem and belief. A lot of the artists had never been complimented before or never had the belief they could achieve anything. So throughout the journey of the film, you see the artists really build what they're capable of, and the art really manifests that self-belief before the viewer. The level of intricacy and detail within the art is quite beautiful and not something you'd expect from an art coming out of a little room in a jail. So, yeah, art is the fundamental transformative aspect of the film, and that's then paralleled with their journeys upon release.
Herbert, finally to you. Mm-hmm. In your film, you quote Werner on chickens. Here he is.
"The enormity of their stupidity is just overwhelming. You have to do yourself a favour. When you're out in the countryside and you see chicken, try to look a chicken in the eye with great intensity. And the intensity of stupidity that is looking back at you is just amazing."
You said this applies to ostriches as well. Yeah. Have you had the chance to assess our Australian equivalent, the emu?
I have indeed.
You have?
Yeah, I have indeed.
And
yeah,
what did you find?
First thing I did the first day I was here, I went looking for emu, wallabies, and kangaroos. So I looked deep into the eye of the emu, and Werner is profoundly right. It's stupidity magnified a hundredfold.
I want to thank you both for coming in. It's been a great conversation.
Thank you very much.
Herbert Golder and Alex Siddons are both documentary film directors, and you can catch both the films that they've been working on, that they've produced, that they've put out there for the world at the Melbourne Documentary Film Festival. We'll put a link on our website.